it is. It is the Alex Dono Show on a Wednesday. Why do I sound so peppy when my football teams are in the toilet? I don't know. I can't answer that question. Maybe I should feel good about the Canes this weekend.
They are favorites.
Dolphins won't lose this weekend, I can guarantee you that.
I still think they could lose on a bye.
I mean, I'm certainly not going to get any fantasy help from Frank Gore this week, who I'm forced to start in one of my leagues because I have so many damn injuries. He's not going to help me.
Is he getting closer to 750 yards? Or
he's at 528, man. I think you're in trouble.
I mean, we had nothing for me to do if I lose. So
I know. I'm going to be able to pick a humiliation for you of my choice. But no, Young Biff and I made a wager prior to the season starting where I said Frank Gore will – we set the over-under at 750 yards. I said he will go over 750. Biff was dead set on the under. 528 now. We still have 8 games left or 6 games left to play? Your mic wasn't on.
Yeah, I realize that. I'm still confident.
We'll see. We go out now to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Tom DeAngelo, our friend from the Palm Beach Post who covers the Miami Hurricanes. Tom, right out of the gate, do you think that does it make sense to you that Miami is favored by 5.5 points at Virginia Tech on Saturday?
I was surprised when I saw that. You know, is Virginia Tech that bad? And I haven't seen them in the last 3 weeks.
They're pretty bad, but Miami's so bad that to me, I feel like whoever's the home team should be favored in that matchup.
I would think in this game, yes. When I expected Virginia, I thought Virginia Tech would be like a 3.5 point favorite when I looked at it. I think Sunday night when it came out, I was like, I think at that point it was 3.5. I haven't seen it since. It's gone up to 5.5.
Yeah. 5.5.
Jeez. I don't think many people are watching Miami the last month.
they're just thinking about the last game they watched was like the FIU game. This team's great.
It is amazing to think that these two teams are combined, have lost 7 games in a row combined. In this game that everybody expected in, you know, September to be the game that would decide the, you know, ACC Coastal, the winner would be going to the ACC championship game. It's really been a strange year.
Yeah, it has. You're right, because I think on just about every media member's ballot, it was 1 and 2 in the Coastal, Miami and then Virginia Tech, or Virginia Tech and Miami. It's very weird to see the Pitt Panthers being now the team to beat. Tom DeAngelo from the Palm Beach Post joins us here on WQAM. So, Tom, sticking with Nakosi Perry as the starting quarterback this weekend, right call?
Oh, yes. It's time to get a gauge as much as you can for the rest of the year on just what Nakosi is. It was encouraging, but I'll tell you what. And I'm going to say that. Before I say this, I'm going to say that it was definitely a step forward, and it was encouraging the way he played. But, man, is the standard so low that a quarterback who throws for 165 yards is being celebrated this week? Because, you know, if this were any other year, any other time, you know, Nikosi's game at Georgia Tech would be looked at as, it would not be, certainly not be kind of celebrated the way it's been, because it has been so bad, that position for Miami this year, that any hope, you know, a guy who comes out of there without throwing an interception, completing some, you know, more than 50% of his passes. He had 2 very good drives in the entire game. But it was a step forward. But that's kind of just shows you, you know, how what a difficult year it has been at that position.
So, and honestly, how much better do you think that he would be playing, and even Malik Rozier would be playing, if the offensive line had at least really been serviceable for the last month?
That's a huge part of it. We don't know that, Donald, but that is a huge part of it. And we see this all the time in football. I mean, the problems this year, to me, start with the offensive line. There have been quarterback issues. I understand that. But they have. They started their 5th different combination against Georgia Tech, which, you know, just shows you that as much uncertainty as in their minds for the quarterback position, it's the same thing for the offensive line, and you know that's where That's where the when you look forward, looking forward, where people say, what are they going to do with quarterback next year? Is one of the two guys, whether it's Nikosi or Jaren Williams, or they bring in Kelly Bryant, is somebody going to be serviceable? I think you got to, as importantly, is who's going to be in the offensive line? Are they going to have an offensive line? Because, you know, I know they lose a few guys. They have two or three seniors, but there hasn't been any indication, like at quarterback, that there's anybody who's ready to step in and help that unit improve. And that's huge. Those two positions, man, you talk about the two spots, the two most important spots on offense. They're 1 and 1A. I know quarterback is, everybody looks at it as one, but offensive line, you've got to have an offensive line to make an offense work. And that has been as much as an issue this year as the quarterback position.
Now, at quarterback, I've got to ask you, because you brought up a name that's become very polarizing now among this fan base, and Kelly Bryant. You know, he's going to take a visit. He's going to visit Miami on the day of the Pitt game. He's going to be here making his official visit. There's a graduate transfer from Clemson, a guy who obviously had been a part of a very successful team, and he's not a great quarterback. If he was an elite quarterback, wouldn't have been benched in the first place. But Kelly Bryant is probably right now better than anything else you've got on that roster. I look at this, Tom, and I say, if he does decide to transfer to Miami, I say, great. You're giving yourself an option. Even if he doesn't win that starting job next year, he adds depth to that position, and he probably would win that starting job and maybe keep that seat warm for Jaren Williams to take over in the long term. I just think there's so much fear among Canes fans, Tom, because I hear people say, oh, well, this is terrible, because if he comes, Nikosi Perry probably transfers, and maybe Jaren Williams thinks about transferring, and you're stunting your long-term growth. I think people are overthinking this, Tom. Like, I can remember when, 15 years ago when Brock Berlin transferred to the U, I'd say that worked out pretty well. I was a little bit afraid of that when he came in, because Miami had a young quarterback named Mark Gillen at the time, who went to the same high school as Ken Dorsey. I was worried, oh, they're going to stunt Mark Gillen's growth. He ended up transferring. You never hear from the guy again anyway. I think people are overthinking this when they're afraid of Kelly Bryant transferring to the U.
Well, I understand the fears, because if you do lose one or both, but both especially, where are you in 2020? Number one, is Kelly Bryant going to mean, what is that going to mean next year? You're not going to have an offensive line like we spoke about. You're going to lose more than half your defense. I see this program. I don't know what the win loss is going to be, but I don't think they're going to be as good a team next year. I think next year there is a step back before you start moving forward and getting some young guys going, because you just look at it. I mean, I don't know how anybody can think they'd be a better team. They're going to lose most of the defense, and they don't have an offensive line. They don't have a quarterback. So if Kelly Bryant comes and you solve that quarterback position, but what is that going to get you? Now, if he comes in and you lose a quarterback or two, where are you in 2020? And here's where I would have said, bring him in. If you had a stud coming in this year, and you could say that he could learn a year behind Kelly Bryant, and you were confident that that guy could be your quarterback after sitting out a year and just learning the system, okay. But they don't have one quarterback in this class. And they're not going to find one now, because there's nobody out there.
I think they've already given up for this one.
Yeah, so 47 of the top 50 quarterbacks have committed in 247's rankings. So what does that leave you? If they both transferred, it's a disaster, because you have nothing. You have Cade Weldon, would be the only other scholarship quarterback on scholarship.
Okay, that is kind of frightening.
That's the real possibility if he comes in. And even if one of them transfers, what do you have the next year? You bring in a quarterback for 2020, you'd absolutely have to. And I'll tell you what, nothing gives me confidence that they're going to bring in a stud, because we've given this, even for 3 years, what do we have? It has been, amazingly, the one area which I have said where Mark Richt deserves criticism, is the quarterback position has been mismanaged. If you look at it and you believe that they're going to bring in a star next year and you get that guy can play in 2020, okay, go ahead. Bring in Kelly Bryant for the bridge. But I don't see it. I don't see that guy coming to the University of Miami. And the other thing is, if they're so, if they are bringing him in, and if they've gone to the point where he's coming in for a visit, what does that tell you about their faith in the other two guys?
Yeah, exactly. It tells me that they're certainly not that hopeful.
Not sure.
And unless, I mean, to me, it probably says more about their faith in Nikosi Perry, because I would still like to think that they're confident that Jaren Williams would live with the idea of not starting next year. He would still have three more years of eligibility after that. But to me, like, it obviously says a lot about their lack of faith in Nikosi Perry.
I just think it's a really sticky situation with, you know, if he comes in, and I we've said all this. I don't believe that. I think it'll be tough to get him. I think I'm with you on that. Yeah, I think, especially where, you know, at Arkansas, everybody believes Arkansas is the lead in the clubhouse for him. But Chad Morris is the head coach there. Chad Morris recruited him out of high school and also, you know, coached him. He was an offensive coordinator at Clemson. So that's number one. It's going to be difficult to get him to come here. But boy, they've laid their cards out on the table. We kind of know what they think of these two guys right now. If they're that willing to bring him in and pursue him, you know, contact him, now bring him in for a visit. We kind of know what they think of these two guys, and they really don't have. Right now, it doesn't appear that they have confidence that either one of these two guys can be a guy that leads you to any kind of success next year.
We're joined here by Tom DeAngelo, covers the Miami Hurricanes for the Palm Beach Post. Tom, what do you think? You know, obviously there's a lot of outrage by the fan base towards, you know, the coaching staff, mm-hmm. to the play calling, to, you know, to some of the decisions being made, to the fact that, you know, the quarterback's coach happens to be the son of the head coach, and you see the way the quarterbacks are performing. Now, I am not a fire Ricked guy, nor do I think there's any reasonable chance that would happen this offseason. But what do you think the end game is going to be heading into next year? Do you think we might see a new play caller next year? Do you think we might see a new quarterback's coach, a new offensive line coach? What kind of changes do you think are reasonable to expect for that staff, if any?
I think he has to do something. He has to shake it up. There has to be some changes. I don't think he's going to give up play calling. I think that, you know, it maybe new. My thought is, if I had to pick one, it might be Thomas Brown might go, and he might bring in a new offensive coordinator that at least can give him some, well, bring in someone else with other ideas. You know, the offensive coordinator doesn't call the plays, we know that, but still, the offensive coordinator has a heavy hand in the offense.
Yeah,
and the type of offense they run. So, you know, bringing someone else with different ideas as far as John Rick, that's, it's going to be a very difficult situation for him. I did a story a couple of weeks ago. I talked to Bobby Bowden about the most difficult time of his coaching career was when Jeff Bowden was on his staff, and then Jeff Bowden started taking all the heat.
Yep.
And basically, Jeff Bowden, after they lost to Wake Forest at home 30-0, he walked into his father's home, his mom and dad's home, and he resigned. And Bobby still, against his wishes, he did not want him to do it. He finally said, I have to, you know, I've got to go. It's killing you. And so, you know, John Rick's 20. It's a little different situation.
Yeah, it is. But I read that story you wrote, and it was very powerful. Yeah. And I think that you're right. The situations at this moment aren't exactly alike. But,
no, because,
you know, a couple years down the road, it could become that.
Yes, but, you know, in another reason, you know, and that's part of it, is they look at the John Rick's limited experience. He's coached basically 2 years, and one was as a, you know, both of them were kind of like consultants. They weren't really coached before he came to the University of Miami. So, you know, one year under his dad. In fact, he wasn't even paid because he couldn't be paid because of nepotism laws when he was at Georgia for the 1 year under his dad, and then 1 year at the Buffalo Bills. So, you know, could it be they find someone does Mark a favor and gives John a job in the area, the Dolphins, a consultant, you know, maybe like what he had with the Bills. You know, hey, could you help him out, put him on your offensive staff? FAU, FIU. I'm just throwing out names. Mm-hmm. These are the programs where you could still stay close to the family, because we know this was as much a family decision as it was a football decision. A very close-knit family, and they really enjoyed being around each other. I don't think John would want to leave, but if it meant, you know, having to work somewhere and he had to, I would guess that would change things. But or even keep him on staff in some other way. I don't know what's going to happen with that, but I'll tell you what, he's going to fire his son. John Wood's going to have a job somewhere next year, whether it's at UM or somewhere else, probably in the area, in football. But I think there will be, you know, as far as Searles, I don't know. I don't know anything about the dynamic between that you know, he and Mark, and just exactly, you know, how much he will take the heat for the play of the offensive line or for the recruiting, or, you know, my first year on this beat, I'm not sure even if he, you know, how much recruiting he's going to be as offensive lineman. But I do think there's going to be some moves on the offensive staff. And my guess would be maybe the coordinator would be the first one if something had to give there.
Great stuff here, as always, from Tom DeAngelo. Final thing, though, Tom, your prediction. Does Miami, at any point within these next two games, are they going to be bowl eligible?
Yeah, I think they will. Actually,
all right.
You know, I could see them, actually, believe it or not, I could see them winning both games because just the way Virginia Tech played. Now, Virginia Tech saying the same thing about Miami. Well, we're going with the team. They've lost 3 in a row. We can win this game.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech saying, oh, they've lost 4 in a row. We're at home. We got to win this game.
Yeah.
So you have two teams that are reeling. But they're not that far off. You know, it's not like Miami's going in this in the disadvantage talent-wise. So if they put it together and they're able to not allow Virginia Tech to get on a roll and get out fast, you know, start like you did last week against Georgia Tech, get your quick point, but then, you know, get your touchdown, get your early lead, take the crowd out of the game, and maybe you can kind of demoralize them. You know, Pittsburgh, believe it or not, Pittsburgh may have clinched the Coastal. They will if they win this week. Do they play Wake?
I think they already clinched, actually. Is that right, Biff?
Well, could Virginia, have they clinched? They may have clinched the Coastal. Yeah. Last week with Miami, I just looked at the Miami situation. I didn't go through everybody else, but they probably have. You know, being at home, being the last game for the seniors, there's just going to be a lot of emotion in that game. Sure, they could win both games. I think for sure they're in the bowl. I mean, I would be very surprised if they don't win one. But I would say, they have a chance to win two. Now, will that matter? 7 wins, 6 wins? What bowl to go to?
Well, it means in about a month I'll see you in Shreveport.
Yeah, it's a cluster of bowls, Shreveport, Annapolis, Detroit, you know, even El Paso would be in that mix, probably, maybe not. They're in the first tier, but it's going to be one of those three or four bowls, so it won't matter much. But there's a big difference, because then if you go into a bowl game and you lose, you can't get under. If you win a bowl game 6-6, now you can finish your season 6-7. There's a big difference between 6-7 and 7-6. So, yeah. I think it would be important to win those last two, go into a bowl, you know, on a little bit of a roll. And, hey, maybe they could reverse what they did last year, win the last three instead of lose the last three.
I like that. Focusing on the positive, Tom DeAngelo covers the Hurricanes for the Palm Beach Post. Follow him on Twitter at TomDeAngelo44. So Miami's going to go 8-5 is what Tom is guaranteeing. Thank you,
so
Tom.
They would finish 8-5. I'll be 11. Well, it depends what, you know. Yeah, it's possible, because those lower bowls, you're not getting the cream of the crop of your opponent either. that's the advantage. That's the one thing about going into those, you know, the type of bowl they're going into. They're going to play a very beatable team, not a team that's made a Power Six, not a Wisconsin or somebody else that's a really good team. So you have a chance to win it. Now, you know, what does it mean? Not a whole lot, but it gives you a little feel good coming off the year, as opposed to kind of last year when you a 10-0 start was a little bit, you know, felt a little, you didn't feel as great about it after the season ended.
Well, enjoy Blacksburg, and then I'll see you in Detroit or Shreveport in a month.
I'm actually, we are pulling in an audible this week, and I'm going to the biggest game in the state.
Which is?
That be? You tell me, where's the biggest college football game in the state this weekend? It's a no-brainer.
Is it? I don't know. I'm drawing a blank.
Game day, ABC.
Oh, I didn't realize that was a home game for UCF. My bad.
Yeah.
UCF hosting Cincinnati, biggest game in the history of the state of Florida.
Biggest game in the state this week. Biggest game in
ever.
Biggest game in the state this year.
Love it.
I'll go as far as that. I don't know if there's been another big one. The way the Florida, Florida State, Miami have played, I can't imagine neither one of them. None of them have played a big game. This is the biggest game of the state this year. This is Central Florida's. This is their chance to back up all that talk to the nation. Their chance to crow on game day for 3 hours Saturday morning, and then they're a pretty good favorite. They win that game, and you're one more win away, and then, oh boy, if Central Florida goes 12-0 and they don't get in the playoff, which they won't.
I can't wait. Yeah, and I can't wait for that to happen, by the
way. That is going to be – that's the reason I'm rooting for them not to lose is because I just want to hear it. I want to – it'll just to sit back and watch, what happens if they go 12-0 and finish, 10th in the college football rankings.
And don't forget, they do have Bennigan's in Orlando, so you should hit that up.
That's right, they do. And the – I'm drawing a blank. Monte Cristo at the Monte Cristo.
The Monte Cristo. You either stop That's by right. there or Medieval Times or something before the game.
So I'll be going to Orlando this week, and then I'll see you back at Hard Rock Stadium next weekend.
Love it. Tom DeAngelo, thank you so much, my friend. Enjoy your night.
Okay. Thanks, Donald.
Great job. He covers the Miami Hurricanes for the Palm Beach Post, although he's cheating on Miami, and he's covering UCF this weekend. How dare he? We'll open up the phone lines to angry Canes fans or excited Canes fans. Next. Radio.com.
Radio.com.
Yeah, I got my my Muse pre-sale tickets yesterday for March 24th. I'm very excited. Although it's 4 months away. It feels like an eternity.
Oh, it is an eternity away if it's 4 months away, man. Come on. That's a long time.
I mean, who knows? Although, I've been a dad for 8.5 months. Those have flown by, so maybe the 4 months for Muse will fly by.
I feel like you've been a dad for, 5 years
Doesn't
now.
It feel that way? Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I thought Luca would be starting school next week or something like that.
God, I wish. I'd get some more free time. I cannot wait to send that kid off to school. I understand it's a very hard moment for some parents to, send your kid off to school. I'm going to speed when I'm driving him to school the first time. It's going to be fantastic.
I feel like we have a clickbait story later on that you're going to be with that parent.
You're going to see me turn up. I'll probably get fired because it seems to happen. You notice when people in the media get arrested, they tend to get fired pretty quickly. I'm going to turn up in the news because I'm driving my son to his first day of school. I'm going 120 miles per hour in a 30. They haul me off
to
jail.
Antonio Brown did that a couple last week, and he played in the game, and it was nothing happened. So maybe you get the Antonio
maybe that
Brown
would happen
treatment.
Too. I'm going 120 in the 30. And I get arrested. And I just show up and do my show. Maybe it can finally give me some street cred. I can wear it as a badge of honor.
Just do this when you see the cop.
And he'll know.
And they'll be like, "Hello, officer." Kind of have to do that, get
Is that really what I sound like?
No, it's more like, "Yes!"
That's a little bit better. I don't know what you sound like a Sesame Street character before that.
I feel like Oscar the Grouch.
Let's go to the phones. Let's talk to Gordo here on QIM. I'm sure Gordo will lift our spirits. What's up?
I know this is all hurricane bashing stuff, and, I love that whole Randall. I love it to the... You know the guy that I really like the most that you guys that everyone's had on that we've had on the air the last all this is going on. That guy from Atlanta who
John Michaels. It. Yeah, he's great.
I love that guy. How do we get that guy down here?
It's weird. I'm surprised that he doesn't make an effort. I'm surprised he doesn't make an effort to work down here. Maybe he just really likes living in Atlanta or he's got family there. He doesn't want to. I don't know He graduated from the U. He's more passionate about Miami football than he is any of the sports teams in Atlanta. It would make sense. I mean, as long as he's not taking my job, Gordo, I'm fine with him coming down here. He's really good.
There's an opening from 10 to 2. I mean, the guy that was subbing for the Big O made me long for the Big O. I mean,
Well, listen, I think everybody does a great job. You know that.
4 hours of that, you everyone would go to sleep. I mean, you'd have a lot of accidents on 836.
What's on your mind tonight?
This Heat team. I'm watching this thing. I know we're winning by 15 points. We're up by 20. Every time Justice Winslow gets the ball and starts dribbling, he's a turnover.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get it. The guy misses layups. The guy fumbles the ball.
I'm so triggered just by the fact that he's still on this team.
I can't. What are they seeing this guy? Who is making these? I mean, I was under the impression that they signed this guy to give him a salary number so they could trade
yes.
him.
Yes. Yeah, me
I
too.
I don't understand what they see with this guy.
I don't know if it's the fact he went to Duke and the fact that, you know, he actually gives more effort on defense than most NBA players.
I don't care about defense anymore. No one cares about defense.
Yeah, you're right, because league-wide scoring is up like 15 points this year. I mean, a memo has gone out this year. It is no longer a defensive league. You're right.
I'm tired of this, like, Heat culture nonsense. He fits with the culture. What's the culture? You get in early and you practice and you do what you're supposed to do and you do your job. That's great. That's what the culture should be.
You know what Heat culture is? Heat culture is when you have players like prime D. Wade and Shaquille O'Neal and prime LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and D. Wade, you're going to win championships. Guess what?
Exactly.
When you don't have players like that, you're going to win 41 games, and you're going to brag about your culture.
When your best player is Josh Richardson, let me tell you something, you're lottery bound, okay? You're lottery bound. And that's
And you remember, Gordo, the Heat culture phrase was created like 2 days after LeBron James left and went back to Cleveland. Well, all it is, it's brilliant marketing, right? Summer of 2014, LeBron James announces, I'm going back to Cleveland. 2 days later, they're selling
that
Heat culture T-shirts.
Goes out on top of American Airlines.
It was a giant diversion. Heat culture is a propaganda catchphrase created to try and make you forget about the fact that the best players in the world no longer play here.
Yeah, now we're stuck with, I'm looking at the bench, Bam Adebayo, Kelly Olynyk, and Hassan Whiteside.
I like me some Bam, though. I like me some Adebayo.
Oh, come on. There's a million Bam Adebayos out there. There's nothing special about that guy. What is that guy? Let me tell you this. What has that guy done to his game from last year to this year that you've seen any difference? Has his offensive production changed? Has he developed anything from the outside? Has he done a turn? I mean, all this guy is he's a bona fide garbage paler.
I got news for you, Gordo. You are making millennial Biff on the other side of the glass. Because, you know, because he's Biff, what are you, 22, Biff?
22. Plus,
so,
I go to Heat practice every once in a while.
He does.
Bam Adebayo is going out there, and he's practicing shooting threes. He's gotten progressively better at shooting him.
No, and I'm with you, Biff, on Adebayo. But it's funny because Gordo, when you say a lot of true things about the state of this team right now, Biff being 22 years old, like he can barely remember a time before the Heat started winning titles. So he's got the Miami Heat glasses on.
But what has Bam Adebayo done? He doesn't shoot the ball. I mean, there's a million Bam Adebayo.
He's only in his second year. Let's give the guy a break.
I'd rather have T.J. Brown than Bam Adebayo.
Probably, I would too.
I mean, it just this team is just going nowhere. It's unbelievable. I watch. You know, I was thinking of Ira, and like this is the opportunity in the schedule where we're supposed to win games.
Yes,
and we're dropping games like flies here. I mean, anyone can come into this arena and just blow us out. And you know what the problem is at the end of the day? When you look at the teams that we play against, whether it was Washington, we lost that game. What was the other games we lost at home?
Sacramento.
That was a bad one, too.
But, outside of Sacramento, that was a bad one. Every team we've been playing against always has, ultimately, at the end of the day, the better player on the court. And when you have the best player on the court, you have a chance to win the game. And every time we play, we should win this game tonight because we've got better players. But,
right.
I mean, this is what happens.
We're only up nine now.
We've just got a bunch of guys that are interchangeable. I mean, like the only guy that I would probably keep on this roster just because, is I'd keep Ellington because I just love his three balls and you need it.
You absolutely need it. And I got to let you run. You've successfully lifted my spirits. I always appreciate when you do that. I love talking to Gordo. he's making Biff legitimately angry. He raises some fair points, though.
He does, but in the end, the Miami Heat are still going to be like a sixth or seventh seed at the end of the year. They're not going to
be. Yeah, because the East is garbage.
Exactly,
I mean,
but you know what that's going to do, too? No lottery pick. This team is irritating
yes,
on that
thank
margin
you.
Because
yeah.
they're not going to have a lottery pick.
I'm triggered by that. The Alex Donoff Show continues.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Man, how dare me and Gordo blaspheme the Heat? Blasphemous to bash the Heat, a texter writes. They always start out slow and will get red hot making the playoffs again. Yeah, but it's just like, I know I'm spoiled, right? Like, I know that there are people who live in certain NBA cities who I guess would kill just to make the playoffs. The Heat standard is higher, right? I mean, getting into the first round and getting beaten up, to me, is not the standard for Heat basketball. I'm not satisfied with that. I would like a team that I feel like can actually contend for something beyond the first round of the playoffs. That's all that I ask, right? Getting to the playoffs and getting beaten in five games like you did last year against a Sixers team that was pretty good but not nowhere near great, that's not enough for me. And listen, I'm not bashing the history of the Heat franchise. I mean, listen, as far as consistency and management, as far as recent success goes, they blow every other team in this market out of the water. Marlins, ha. Panthers may finally be assembling a very good team. They've won five in a row, but historically they don't have the consistency and the success that the Heat have. The Miami Dolphins lately, obviously, in the last 20 years, they've been a hot mess. So, yeah, the Heat have the edge in that. I'm not disrespecting the legacy of Pat Riley or Mickey Arison, and I think Eric Spoelstra is a damn good coach. All I'm saying is this current Heat roster is not taking you anywhere until you can make a splash and draft or sign or trade for a superstar. You're not going to be any better than, you know, a team that comes in fifth or sixth place or seventh place or eighth place in the East. Probably gets bounced in the first round. That's what you are until you can get a franchise-changing player.
We have two more years of that. We have to get rid of Bumpy's contract at least, and then we know that's going to free up some space. Or somebody maybe next year will look and be like, oh, maybe an expiring Whiteside contract or an expiring Tyler Johnson contract. They see him in a different way, and they're like, okay, we'll take him off your hands. And, you know, you have to probably – you'd have – for the Heat to get good right this year – it would be taking away a lot of pieces that they've been building throughout the years. So it's like, it's not like you're just going to lose Jay Rich or something like that for something. You'll probably lose Jay Rich, Whiteside, Winslow. You'll lose a lot of the players. And as nice as it is, you know, you may not think that Winslow's that great. You may not think Adebayo's that great, but they are the future of your team. You are, in a sense, stripping your team of the future.
By the way, you brought up Bumpy, Tyler Johnson. Is it true that every time he's gone to the free throw line, the Nets fans are chanting offer sheet?
Ira Winderman tweeted that out.
That is gold. That is gold.
I mean, it's the perfect thing for them. They saved themselves so much money on that. They won that offer deal thing.
They slipped the poison pill to the Heat. The Heat matched it. And yeah, I listen, the Nets are probably not winning this game tonight, but I think it's a win for their fans that they can chant offer sheet at Tyler Johnson anytime he's at the free throw line. I think that is fantastic. Let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to Frank here on QIM. What's up, Frank?
How you doing, Alex?
Good, man. How about you?
I'm okay. Hey, you were talking about kids. Did you see Blockers with John Stewart?
No, you know, and I remember, and I'll tell you the reason why I have not watched it is about a month ago, Mark Hockman says that's the funniest comedy he's ever seen. I do not trust his taste in movies. I have avoided it for that reason. But was Blockers a good movie?
It was funny, but the very beginning when you were talking about your child going to school for the first time, John Cena was hilarious. He was like in tears, and they let you look weird because the kids are going off to kindergarten. So in 4 years, I was imagining you on your knees crying, letting your child in your arms up the stairs into school, you know?
And I probably would, to be honest, I probably will do that because I'm very attached to the kid, and we're planning on him being an only child. I will disclose that, so I'll probably be extra attached to him. And so, yeah, I probably will shed a few tears.
I could just, because I saw that, and once you were talking about, that's the first thing I can imagine, you on your knees, crying, letting your child go from your arms into school. So I just, when you were talking about that, I just had to bring that up. But now about the Hurricanes. Did you know the last 4 years of the Hurricanes, they've lost four in a row, and this is the fourth year in a row they've done that, and then they've won their next games? So I'm just thinking, I mean, I don't
know. So if you carry over the years, then you mean, because so last year they ended the year losing three in a row, but then they lost the fourth in a row to LSU.
Yeah, so I'm sort of counting LSU as like last year's group, and then we went on a roll, you know, we won five in a row, now we've lost four in a row. So if the trend continues, we will win our next three games.
Damn right.
And now if we only have three games left, shouldn't Rick start Jaren Williams? I want to see what the hype is about this kid. Everyone says he's the best. He's the great. He's our future. And another thing, if Bryant does come, do you think Bryant would be a good mentor for, because, you know, it seemed like Rozier's the mentor for Nicosi Perry.
Which is probably not the mentor you want. Hey, mentee, let me teach you how to complete 51% of your passes. That's not the mentor I want.
But they're saying, like, Rozier is the mentor for Nicosi Perry, which both of them are not turning out good. I would like to see Bryant come in next year and be a good mentor for Williams, and then the next 3 years, Williams is amazing.
I would hope so. I appreciate the call. You're painting a very rosy picture, and I hope you're right on that. So he's saying that Miami is now due for five straight wins after he said something else in that call that I wanted to address. For the life of me, I can't. Oh, on starting Jaren Williams for the next three games. Here's my thing on that. Now I do not believe that Jaren Williams right now, with his virtually 0.0 experience, got a few snaps in Savannah State game, didn't even throw the ball, I don't think, was handing it off exclusively. He doesn't give you, as Mark Richt would say, the best chance to win right now. And you're still trying to get bowl eligibility, right? So I know that a lot of Hurricanes fans have just pretended that there is absolutely nothing to play for, so just throw in the towel if you have to on this year to prepare for next year. That's not really true when you're trying to fight for a six win just to play in a bowl game. You may not think it's important. You may not want to go to the Gasparilla Mowers Bowl, or I think I'm mixing up names of bowl games. You may not want to go to the Gasparilla Bowl. So that's the Lawnmower Bowl?
That is the Lawnmower Bowl in St. Pete. But I don't know. Honestly, if they're going to go to any one, I really see it being the Shreveport Bowl, Walk-On Independence Bowl. That's going to be the one they're going to go to.
And so, like, I know it's easy for you to say as a Canes fan, oh, it's so embarrassing to go to the Independence Bowl. I don't even want to go to a bowl. I'd rather not go to a bowl game. Well, you get money to go to bowl games, and this program does need cash infusions wherever they can get it. And you also get a few weeks of extra practices for your players, which is important for next year. So, yes, it is important to go to a bowl game, even though you might feel embarrassed by going to the Gasparilla Bowl or to the Independence Bowl. It is important, even if it's a crappy bowl game, it is important to go to a bowl game. It does benefit your program because you get three extra weeks of practices. You get money for your program. So it is important to go to a bowl game. And yes, you have to make sure you win one, if not both, of these final two games to secure a spot in that bowl game. You can't just throw in the towel and start Jaren Williams. I think Jaren Williams is going to get playing time. Another thing on that is, though, I would be hesitant to start him. I'd be hesitant to start the kid playing behind that offensive line. You're putting his health and his future at risk by putting him behind this offensive line. Now, later in games, the situation will ease up a little bit. You know, if you're way ahead or way down in a game, you're going to pick your spots and give him some playing time. But to start him right now behind that offensive line, to me, is a little bit frightening, and that's a risk I don't believe Miami should take. But I'm with you. I want to see Jaren Williams play, and maybe if he gets some playing time in Virginia Tech and looks really good, then maybe you can think about starting him in the Pitt game. But I would tread very lightly on that.
I mean, yes, but no in the same time. I mean, in a sense, you don't know if that offensive line's going to get better next year. And if you want, I mean, he has to be able to, he has to play through tough situations. You can't put a kid in the perfect situation, expect them to come in and play well. That just doesn't work. You may have to throw him in. And if he looks like he's really getting beat up out there, then yeah, you know, you have to make adjustments and stuff like that. Maybe you don't keep him out. But maybe you kind of, between him and Nkosi, you kind of put more of a two-quarterback system in there. I mean, the kid who came in and played his first career game, I think, against the Canes last year at Pitt, he's a starting quarterback and doing really well this year.
Yeah, you're right
and
about that.
The Canes defense looked really scary last year. Just saying.
560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. Good point, Biff. Or get in via the phone lines at 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. 9 o'clock hour coming up here on QAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.